blessing. And then while we were there, we ran into a bunch of different pastors and stuff. And Jim Donath and his church, the Evangelical Baptist Church. How's that for an oxymoron? Evangelical Baptist Church. Actually, it's true. They should be. Baptists are evangelical, but evangelicals are not Baptists. Anyways, they're going to have a meeting beginning tonight. Now, they're in Bailey and Lovejoy area. I don't know if you know where that area is. And it's a small church, about this size, maybe a little smaller. But they're going to have Buddy Blunk all in. Now, my wife and I have been around the block for the past 20 years and seen a lot of people. We've seen them all and heard them all. And my wife was saying to me last night, she said, you know, my two favorite preachers in all the world are Buddy Blunk all and Jimmy Hood. Well, she got to hear Jimmy on Friday, and Buddy's going to be in for a few nights. If you can, go. You will not be disappointed. Buddy Blunk was one of the great evangelists. He retired from the ministry in 2008 to become a teacher, and he came out of retirement because the church is a mess. And Buddy Blunk is a contemplative, meditative preacher. He doesn't run around and scream and holler and throw Bibles and throw fits, but he will reach all the way down in your heart and make you think. He will take an Old Testament message, and he'll give it in such a way that when it's all done, you will think. He'll bring it right into shoe leather into your present world. He's very, very good. So you'll get a blessing if you hear him. He'll be here Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 7 o'clock. You better go 6:30 if you want a good seat in the back. Baptist sit in the back. Evangelical Baptist Church, if you get a chance. My recommendation. I'll be there every night, except for tonight. I got to do the radio. Unless someone wants to do the radio, and I'll go. You want to do radio for me? Anybody? Okay, then I'm going to have to do it. I lost my good pair of glasses, but I found these nice cheap ones, and they'll do fine. If you, by the way, if there's anything you do want to get lost, just give it to me. I promise I'll lose it in the first 24 hours. I guarantee you will never find it again.
What time is the
Jim said to be there at 6:30. That's what Jim Donath, the pastor, said. Yeah. All right, we're going to continue our studies. We are in the book of Revelation. The testimony of Jesus Christ is the spirit of prophecy, and this is the revelation of Jesus Christ. And what you're reading in this book, very surprising. I mean, we've been reading from chapter 6 on, and there have been all these judgments coming upon the planet. And the judgments, the seals were opened. Jesus is opening the seals, and all this mayhem is happening down here on planet Earth. And then when the seventh seal opens, then all of a sudden these trumpets begin to sound. And with each trumpet, it's kind of a mess. Things are happening. There's a trumpet that causes environmental catastrophe as the trees are burnt up and grass is burned up. And then there's a volcano erupts and things in the sea are killed. And then a comet hits the planet Earth and causes the fresh waters to become like wormwood. And then all of a sudden there are signs in the heavens, and the sun doesn't shine for one-third of the day, and the moon is one-third of it is smitten, and one-third of the stars, and it's darkened on planet Earth. And he ends the eighth chapter telling us, I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the voices of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound. And so there are three more trumpets to sound, and it's going to be, things are getting worse. They're not getting better. And this is the revelation of Jesus Christ. This is how Jesus Christ is revealing himself. He's revealing himself as a judge. Because he said, I came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. And the law has judgment. And the people on planet Earth, truthfully, if you go out, we were out yesterday on the streets for a short while preaching. But if you go out and preach to people and talk to them, and you say to them, well, do you think you're all right with God? Do you think you have a relationship with God? Do you think perhaps today, if you were to die, you would go in God's presence and be in heaven? And if you were to ask him that question, the majority of people will say to you, they'll say, well, I'm trying to be a good guy. I'm trying to keep the law. That's what they'll usually say. And then we try and explain to them, well, the law is not the way to get to God. Jesus Christ is the way to God. The law is probably the way that's going to keep you from God. And Timothy said, you know, we know that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and the disobedient and the ungodly and the sinners and the unholy and the profane and for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers and for manslayers and for whoremongers and for them that defile themselves with mankind. That would be sodomy, a man with a man, a woman with a woman, for men stealers, kidnappers, for liars, for perjured persons, if there be anything that's contrary to sound doctrine. That's what the law is about. So why is Jesus revealing himself with all this judgment? Well, they wanted to live according to the law, and none of them kept it, and now judgment comes. Yikes. My recommendation, get out from under the law, get under grace. And then you don't have to be here when all this happens. But here's the revelation of Jesus Christ as the judge doing exactly what the book says. He's going to throw the book at them. That's rough. What's it talking about? You know, there are many laws made on planet Earth. I don't know if you're aware of that, but men like to write laws. They really do. I guess last year alone, the California legislature wrote 2,000 new laws for 1 year. So lots of laws. And the reality is, here's the reality. Now, I'm looking at a whole bunch of people that probably have gone most of their life and never been put under the microscope of the law. Probably none of you have had to stand under the judgment of a judge. But the reality is, so many laws are written, we're all criminals. I don't know if you're aware of that. Probably every time you drive, you break some law. I mean, there are such nuanced little laws that if you're just wandering in a lane and get too close to a yellow line, you could be ticketed for that. Not, people don't enforce it. But there's lots of laws, many laws, and usually what happens in this world is it's selective enforcement. We look here and we grab this guy and we put him under the microscope and he's done, and if we ignore that guy, he's fine. But if anybody's looked at under the law, they're not going to make it. Man's law, not going to make it. And God's law is more severe. And even though he's got fewer laws, the fact is we're not keeping them. And so the Lord now is bringing his judgment. He's revealing judgment as who he is. Jesus is the loving Jesus. Yes, he is. Jesus is the forgiving Jesus. Well, yes, he is. But if you asked for his forgiveness and gotten on your knees and asked to get into his love, it's not a blanket love and a blanket forgiveness. It's individual. It's particular. And these people would not. They would not. So therefore, they get the book. They get the law. Now, when we get to chapter 9, the fifth angel sounds the trumpet, and a star falls from heaven to the earth. And we learn from chapter 1 and verse 20 that the star is an angel. God says the stars are angels. We learn in Isaiah 14, verse 12, there was once a star that fell by the name of Lucifer. Now, to him is given the key of the bottomless pit, and he opened the bottomless pit. And there arose smoke out of the pit, the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. It's already been darkened a little before. Now it's getting even darker on planet Earth. What's happening? When judgment comes, light is withdrawn. Light brings life. Death is accompanied by darkness. The bottomless pit is hell. Isaiah 14, verse 15, that's the bottomless pit. The reason it's bottomless, I mean, it's hard to get it because it's inside the earth. You think you'd go down and you hit bottom, but apparently the way the Lord does it is when you fall into that pit, he doesn't let you hit bottom. You kind of go into a whirl, spinning around in a circumferential manner around there. Apparently the center of the earth, the heart of the earth, is Abraham's bosom. That's fixed. And that's where people that knew Lord went, to a place that was fixed and stable, and they were on a foundation. But the other folks just kind of circle endlessly around there, and they keep falling and falling and falling. They never hit bottom. And that's hell. It's a ring of fire. And when this happens, there comes locusts. Out of the smoke, locusts, verse 3, come upon the earth. It was given unto them a power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. All right, scorpions are a species of animal that possess venom. And the venom that they release is primarily used to kill or to paralyze their victims. And it's done in a manner so they kill them or paralyze them so they can eat them. So it's a way that they go after their prey. And they sting them first, and the thing is paralyzed. Some of the venom is neurotoxins. It stops the nerve from functioning. And when the nerves don't function, then the muscles can't move. So if you hit someone with a neurotoxin, there's a neurotoxin we use in the operating room, was discovered a while back, about 70 years ago, called curare. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It comes from a plant that was actually... The doctors discovered it because when they were down in South America, some of the headhunters down there would get this plant, this curare plant, and they would kind of heat it up and turn it into like kind of a waxy substance, and they would dip their darts on it. And then they would shoot their darts at people, and when the dart would hit people, all of a sudden the person couldn't move, and that's how they would take their prey with this neurotoxin curare. And we've refined it, and we use it in the operating room, and it's good because surgeons don't like a moving target. You know, if a surgeon trying to work on the hand and the hand's moving back and forth, it doesn't work. So they'd often say, patient's moving, give a little more paralysis agent, and I would have to give a little more neurotoxin and settle that thing down. So when he took that scalpel, it could go right where he wanted to and didn't hit a moving target. And so these things are found in nature, these neurotoxins, and scorpions have them. The compounds are made in these little glandular sacs, and the scorpion can release it and regulate the amount that it releases. There's about 1,000 different species of scorpions on the earth. 25 of them have a venom that's deadly to humans. There's one in America called the bark scorpion. You find it in Arizona, New Mexico, around the Colorado River, and California. It's a toxic venom. It'll cause intense pain when you're stung, and then a numbness and a tingling around the area of the sting. You'll get a little redness, a little swelling, and then you'll get this muscle twitching, and then a thrashing. Usually the head and the neck and the eye will begin to start to go back and forth, and the drooling occurs because there's also an enzyme inhibitor in there, and sweating, and then you'll get this excitability. And in children, they'll get this. They'll just cry. The kids will cry continuously as they're bitten by this thing. Adults will get. In an adult, you'll get rapid breathing, increased blood pressure, increased heart rate, and then a beginning of the weakness as the neurotoxin gets into the nerves and the muscles stop moving. What you want to do if you're stung by one is get immediate medical care. It's a good idea, rather than wait a few days and see if everything goes away. It's not a good idea. Get prompt attention. First aid, you know, what they'll do is they'll have, if they don't have an antidote to the toxin, what they'll use is will begin to do antihypertensives, anxiolytics, opiates for the pain, things to block histamine, cold compresses, things like this. And you can really get most people through it, but it's very painful. Now, these locusts that come up, they have stingers like scorpions. And we're going to see that this thing coming out of the bottomless pit is not terrestrial. It's hellish. It's made of a different nature than we are. It's an angelic type of a being, creature. Now, we know from our reading in the scriptures in Ezekiel and in Isaiah and in earlier in Revelation chapter 4, we know that the Lord, when He first created the heaven and the earth, He first created angelic beings. And there was a variety of angelic beings. There were angelic beings that look like men. They're angels. There are other angelic beings that look kind of like mythological creatures. They have the head of a lion and the sometimes the body of a man, and they have the head of an eagle and look like a calf, and they're interesting blends. So God has, if you will, a celestial zoo is what he has. Listen, this is a hard thing to grasp, because here's the way our mind thinks, and here's the way most interpreters' mind thinks. They think that what God writes in the Bible, they explain in earthly terms so we'll understand it. But that's not the truth. Earth is second. God and heaven and his creatures were first. We're a reflection of what's up there. The fact there are horses down there is because there were things up there that God made that are spiritual horses. The fact there are eagles on planet Earth and things that look like birds is because there are bird-like creatures in heaven. That you got to understand, we're the shadow. That's the substance. If you can ever get that thinking right in your mind, it will help you understand things. The Bible isn't writing things so we can understand it. I mean, well, it is written so we can understand it. But the Bible is written so that you can understand it was first God and heaven and his creatures, and we're an afterthought 1,500 years later. And don't get me wrong, he's concerned about us, and he wants to redeem us, and he wants to bring us to him, but we're the smaller, secondary creatures. Amen. Get a hold of that might help. Now, an earthly creature who's unsaved can't even begin to fathom that type of thought, but you ought to, as a spirit-filled, born-again Christian. You ought to understand what's first and what's second, what's the better and what's the lesser. We're the lesser. Sorry, folks, nothing personal. Now, and the other thing, as you start thinking of categories, the Lord has eagles up there. So he has a representation of air creatures. The Lord has a calf up there and a lion up there representing earth creatures. The Lord has angels representing man-type creatures. Now, these locusts that come out that have stings like scorpion, again, they're kind of hybrids. These locusts are going to have a leader over them, we're going to see. But first they're given a command in verse 4. It's commanded they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God on their foreheads. Back, we saw in the 7th chapter, God sealed people. And these locusts are going to go after anyone that does not have the seal of God. So if you're living in the tribulation period, one of the first things you're asking for is the seal of God. You want to be one of God's people. No, none of us should have to go through the tribulation, but if you're not saved and you're here, there's a chance you'll be one of those folks going through it, because it's going to be upon us in, I don't know, 20 less years or so. It's going to be upon us. And so if you're young enough that you're going to live another 20 years, there's a chance you're going to enter into it. And if you are, my recommendation would be start begging for God to seal you in the forehead, because you're not going to want these things to sting you. It was given to them, verse 5, that they should not kill them, but they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torpient of a scorpion when he striketh a man. So the initial sting of the scorpion is when it's the most painful. In the first hour or so of the sting, when that venom is working its way through the skin and working its way through the tissues and working its way, and it's very painful at that time, very excruciating. Now, this is going to be a 5-month sting. And one of the things that when you get to the hospital is, you know, put the cold compresses and give the opiates and it takes it away. The Lord is going to circumvent that. So no doctor can treat what this scorpion stings at this time. 5 months. Why is that? The average locust infestation is from May to September. So May, June, July, August, September. It's a 5-month infestation is when they tend to do their things. So the Lord's just going to, they're mirroring what God's going to have these guys do. And that's what they've been showing us for years. And God's been merciful. See these locusts? You don't like them, do you? You don't like them around, do you? Well, if you think this is bad, imagine what's coming. My recommendation, get saved so you don't have to go through this. See, God gives earthly examples to warn us. Wake up and smell the roses and get out of this thing. Smell the roses, Sharon, and get out of this thing. I've written this book for you. It's very sad for me to think in a nation of ours which says, and our nation, I'm pretty sure, says that salvation comes through education. Wasn't the president just preaching that a few days ago? That education is the way of salvation? Okay, well, okay, so here's your own lips saying it. Now, we know education is not the way of salvation. Jesus Christ is the way of salvation. We understand that. But in order to know about Jesus Christ, you have to either hear or read a Bible. And so here is a nation being equipped to read this book through the process called education. And all these educated people one day are going to enter into a tribulation with their bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degrees. And none of them having read this book. And God says, I put it right there. It was plain as anything. So, you know, I'm not one to go out for the most part. The past week I had to entertain. I did a couple song and dances, played piano, and then you know. But these folks, I had to take them about, and they went to breakfast, something that is completely foreign to me. And so I had to take them as the host. And they went to McDonald's, which is incredibly foreign to me. And I went and I sat there at 8 in the morning and watched this kind of stuff go on. But in my observations, in addition to what the people were eating, which was strange enough, what they were eating spiritually was newspapers and magazines all throughout that room. And I thought, wow. And they probably do this day in and day out, and day in and day out, year in and year out, decade in and decade out. And then they'll die, and they'll never have looked at this. Now, if they don't die and they live in a trib, they're going to hit all this stuff, and they've never looked at this. And they'll be surprised. And God will say, why? I left it here for you. I mean, what does it cost to buy a Bible? Those paperback Bibles we have in there, they're $1.50. Carol's around, isn't she, somewhere? I don't know where she is. But they're over there on the shelf in there. $1.50. We'll give them to you for free. And the folks are going to hit this stuff. Ignorant. And no need to be. Now, when these things sting for 5 months, it's going to hurt. It's going to be so bad. Verse 6, those days shall men seek death, and they shall not find it. They shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Now, this is not uncommon. People have had great trials in life where they've wanted to just give in and give up. I mean, there's a story in the Old Testament of a man named Job. And when Job went through a very rough trial, I mean, he lost his 401k, he lost his bank book, he lost his home, he lost his cars, his automobiles, he lost his cattle, he lost everything, and then he lost his children. And then not only that, he got sick. So sick that he had sore boils from the sole of his foot onto the crown of his head. And he was sitting there with a potsherd and just scraping all the oozing pus off of himself. And he finally said, why is light given to a man that's in misery? And why is life given to someone bitter in soul, which longs for death, but it cometh not? And that's going to be the portrait of these folks that are stung by these scorpions. They're begging to die. The doctor, treat me, nothing's working, nothing's working, nothing we're giving is working. And then kill me. And at that time, probably euthanasia will be legalized. And the doctor will be sitting there pouring whatever it is that makes someone want to die, and it's not working. Now, that's a hard thing for you and for me to grasp, because at this point, under the permissive will of God, if you want to kill yourself, God will let you, for the most part. And many people attempt suicide and are successful. But in this revelation here, go to Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verse 8. The Lord now is taking over control again. It's a hard thing to grasp. You know, I've heard people say, there's no such thing as coincidence. Nothing happens by accident. That's not true. There's all kinds of accidents. Even Jesus permits for accidents in some of his teaching. A man came by chance. Something happened by chance. Things happen by chance. Now, in the permissive will of God. Because right now God is allowing, through his permissive will, people to make free choices and to do things. But when God shuts the door, he's taken the reins. And then things aren't going to happen by chance anymore. God's removing all chance because he wants to make everyone understand this is my finger, it's the finger of God. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verse 8, there is no man that hath power over the Spirit to retain the Spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death, and there's no discharge in that war. The true death is not a flatline EEG. True death is the separation of the physical part from the spiritual part. That's what true death is. And we as doctors, you know, when I used to work on those codes in the emergency room and in the intensive care unit and the operating room, I mean, we're working and we're watching our monitors, which are giving us a relative idea as to how the vital signs are. Is the pressure still good? Is there still a decent circulation? Are we moving some oxygen about? The life of the flesh is in the blood, and I need oxygen, oxygenated blood. I don't want to move around dead blood. And you know, we're doing all these things we can. And honest to goodness, every time we entered a code situation, we didn't know how it was going to turn out. There was times the person revived entirely. There was times the person died. And, you know, we're doing exactly what we're doing. We're doing all the things we're trained to do. We're using all the medications and shock therapies that we have, you know, and cardioversion techniques that we have. And some make it and some don't. And sometimes some are making it for 20 minutes and then they stop all of a sudden. And, you know, we don't know why. What happened there? Well, God decided in one case to take the Spirit, and in the other, he decided not to. And we get all the credit, but it's not us. It's the Lord. Now, at this particular time, ordinarily, the Lord will, right now, today, if you wanted to do it, if I wanted to do it, and I took an AK-47 and shot it in my mouth, just right angle, I could take my life, and the Lord would permit that. But in this time, the door is shut and I'm in control. And people are going to be seeking death and they're not going to be able to kill themselves for 5 months. God's going to make them go through 5 months of torment. So I don't know why. We can ask him. Maybe one day he'll explain it to us why he did this. But he's going to do it and he's writing it down. And seek ye out of the book of the Lord and read, for all of these things shall surely come to pass. Now these folks are seeking for death and they can't find it. These locusts are again, they're supernatural. They're hellish locusts. So verse 7, the shape of the locusts were like unto horses prepared to the battle. On their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold. Their faces were as the faces of men. And they had hair as the hair of women. And their teeth were as the teeth of lions. They had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron. The sound of their wings was as the sound of many chariots and horses running to the battle. They had tails like scorpions. There were stings in their tails. And the power was to hurt men 5 months. And now Joel had a prophecy of this in the Old Testament. If you go back to the second chapter of Joel, Joel chapter 2, that's one of the minor prophets. Right after the major prophet Daniel, there's Hosea, and then Joel is the second minor prophet in the Old Testament after Daniel. And the Lord's going to send these armies of locusts, these supernatural locust, scorpion, horse things out of hell and send them out across planet Earth to deal with people who were men stealers, whoremongers, murderers, liars, rejectors of His grace. People that said, we're going to do it our way. We're not going to have your gospel. We're not going to have your grace. We're not going to have your Son. We're going to build our tower that reaches to heaven. We're going to do it our way with our religion. And the Lord says, okay. Joel chapter 2. Remember, a trumpet sounded. Verse 1, blow ye the trumpet in Zion. Sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord cometh. It is nigh at hand, a day of darkness. Remember, the sun had been darkened. The smoke is darkening things. And gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains. A great people and a strong, there hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. A fire devoureth before them, and behind them a flame burneth. The land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness. Yea, nothing shall escape them. The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses. And as horsemen, so shall they run. Like the noise of chariots on the tops of mountains, they shall leap. Now, I've never been in the presence of a locust swarm, but I went online and watched. You might want to go online and watch a locust swarm. It's like this cloud moves in and you can hear them coming. And they just come in and they just envelop the land. And they're just natural locusts. They're not looking for you. They're looking for green grass and foliage to eat. But when these things come, they're coming for you. Verse 6, before their face the people shall be much pained. All faces shall gather blackness as it stings those wounds. They'll run like mighty men. They'll climb the wall like men of war. I'll get up on the second, third floor. I'll get away from them. It's not going to work. They'll march every one on his ways. They shall not break their ranks. Neither shall one thrust another. They don't accidentally sting one another. They know exactly who to sting. They shall walk every one in his path, and when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. In other words, if we do try to fight back, you know, the people are saying, hey, you know, we got to fight these things. You know the movies. You see the movies all the time with all these strange creatures, and then man thinks of some way to defeat them. You know, the devil is setting people up in Hollywood through all these crazy movies, getting them kind of prepared for Revelation, and yet giving them the false confidence that when it finally comes, you're going to win the battle. Well, you're not going to win this battle. And men are going to come up with ways to try and stab these things with swords or lancets or whatever they come up, it's not going to work. They'll not be wounded. Verse 9, they shall run to and fro in the city. They shall run upon the wall. They shall climb upon the houses. They shall enter in the windows like a thief. The earth shall quake before them. The heavens shall tremble. The sun, the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. And the Lord shall utter his voice before his army. And God's in control of this thing. He's using the wicked, and these are wicked, hellish creatures, but he's using them for the day of wrath and the day of evil. For he is strong that executeth his word. And this is what God's doing. He's now executing his word. He's now applying his word. The day of the Lord is great and very terrible. Who can abide it? Now he talks about these things. Well, God's going to give these locusts, he's going to give them a leader, verse 11. They had a king over them, back in Revelation 9, verse 11. And the king is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. Now, I told you before when we were looking at the eagle has a representation in heaven with a creature. Earthly animals, whether they're domesticated or beastly, have representations in heaven. But according to Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 27, the regular locusts that work down here on planet Earth to do their job don't have a representative in heaven. Proverbs 30:27, the locusts have no king, yet go they forth all of them by bands. They have a very good process that they go by. They march in order. They fly in order. It's amazing to watch those clouds. You go on and take a look at them moving. And the Lord does that by instinct for them. And they just go by instinct. But on this particular one, the Lord wants these locusts obeying his command, so he puts a leader over them that guides them to do what they're supposed to do. So if one locust is supposed to get one person, he's going to get him. And he's not going to miss. And they're given assignments. And that guy's for you, and that one is for you, and that one you don't touch, and that one is for you. And they're going to go forth, and they're going to fulfill their orders. I notice that you get in it's curious, in that verse 9:11, you get both a Hebrew and Greek in one verse. and it's destructive. Because we live in a time now where, unfortunately, Christians are taught that Hebrew and Greek is what you need to know. And right now, since this book has been written, the King James Bible, you don't need Hebrew and Greek. That'll be destructive to your walk with God. It's just kind of a little spiritual application there. Hebrew and Greek is not going to help you in your walk with God if you're an English-speaking person. You're wasting your time looking at lexicons and looking at dictionaries and doing all that kind of stuff. What God wants out of you is the simplicity of reading this book and believing this book is from Him, and then applying this book in your life and then using this book to help others. Talking with, I was hosting Pastor George Birkinshaw and his wife and his son. Good boy. Mid-20s, really striving hard to serve the Lord, reading his Bible. So all the time we would drive and talk, he's going back and forth with me, talking Bible, and we're considering things. And he said, you know, one day we're going to get rewarded. Wood, hay, and stubble will be burned up, but gold, silver, and precious stones will continue. And I said, you're correct. I said, you're correct about that. And I said, and do you understand what gold and silver and precious stones are? In the Bible, this book is likened to gold, to fine gold. The Bible is gold. And then within the Bible, there's the vein of silver, and silver represents redemption of Jesus Christ. I said, so to serve God properly, you want His book. That would be a King James Bible if you're English speaking, not Hebrew and Greek. And then in that book, I told him, you want to concentrate on the vein of silver, which is redemption. You want to concentrate on the gospel of Jesus Christ, which redeems people. I said, you're a smart boy, and your father's smart, and a lot of the people we run with are smart, and we can get into dispensations and studying all kinds of things. But I said, what you're really needed for the folks out there is the silver of redemption of Jesus Christ. And if you use those two things, guess what comes? Precious stones. Those are saved souls. And someday what God's going to weigh at His judgment is, did you use my word? Did you use the most important thing of my word? Well, you did. Look at all these precious stones. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. And for those that use wood, hay, and stubble, modern versions, modern programs, modern church techniques, music, other things like that, may be big, may draw big crowds. May have people coming forward, making false professions, but all burn up. You need the gold of God's Word, the silver of the redemption story in God's Word. That's what people need. And then they'll bring forth the precious stones. And that's what the Lord wants. And so, not Hebrew and Greek. That's wood, hay, and stubble today. God's moved on. That'll destroy your understanding. That'll destroy your faith, and everyone I know that's gotten into Hebrew and Greek has had their faith destroyed. We have a whole legion of pastors today that serve at TR churches. I don't know if you know what they are. But look, they're better than nothing, okay? They use a King James Bible. They use it exclusively because they believe it came from the Hebrew and Greek, but they correct it when they want. And they run back to the Hebrew and Greek and say, well, you know, this is an unfortunate rendering. I heard someone talking about the Sermon on the Mount. And deliver us from evil. Well, it's not really evil. It's the evil one, the Hebrew and Greek, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, no, it is evil. It can't be the evil one because it's a millennial prayer. And at that time, the evil one will be in a pit for 1,000 years. So it can't possibly be the evil one. It's evil. And there will be evil during the millennium. Sufficient will be the evil to the days. There's going to be unsaved people running around in the millennium. So they just don't understand. Running the Hebrew and Greek will confuse you. Good spiritual application. Verse 12. One woe is past. Behold, there come two woes more hereafter. Hey, isn't that enough? But the Lord's not done. He does things in threes. You're begging for mercy in that time, if you're smart. So here comes the sixth angel, verse 13. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year for to slay the third part of men. And the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000. And I heard the number of them. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire and jacinth and brimstone. And the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions. And out of their mouth issued fire and smoke and brimstone. And by these three was the third part of men killed, by fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails. For their tails were like serpents, and they had heads, and with them do hurt. So in other words, the tail is like a serpent, and the end of the tail, instead of being a tail of a serpent, has the mouth of a serpent with a venomous fangs and a tongue that can get you from the back end. Now, they're set loose from the great river Euphrates. Now, that is the area going back near to Babylon, and that's where Satan's seat is. And this, again, is an angelic host. And it's a large host. It's 200,000. That's 200 million. That is a huge army. I mean, I do not know the size of the present American army. I do not think we have 1 million people in our entire armed forces in all four branches at this point in time. During World War II, I think we got as big as 2 or 3 million when everybody was signing up for the war. It's 200 million is a large army. It would be a large army of just human men. But these are angelic beings. And we know how powerful angels are. I keep thinking back to the one story. All I know is every time anybody meets an angel in Scripture, they fall down at his feet as though they're dead. That's the fear that they have because of the size and the power of the being that's standing before them. And, you know, the one story back in 1 Kings, in Isaiah, it's told in a number of places in the Scriptures, where the Lord sent an angel one day to defend Jerusalem against the Assyrian army. And that angel killed 185,000 human warriors in one battle in one night. That's just one. You need 200 million of them? But the Lord is pouring forth His wrath. And He sends them forth. Now, they come forth to slay the third part of men. He's going to kill one-third of the population of the planet that's left at that time. So if He did that today, it would be somewhere around 2.3 billion people. The numbers are staggering. We were depressed when they hit Pearl Harbor and we lost 1,000 men. We were very upset when we had this thing on 9/11 and we lost, 3,000 men? Okay. 2.3 billion, you can't even compare the two numbers between 1,000 and a billion. A billion. If you had 1,000 people die a day, it would take 3,000 years to reach 1 billion. So if you started killing 1,000 people a day at the time of Jesus Christ, you still got 1,000 years to go and you haven't killed 1 billion. You compress 1 billion, that's big. Now make it 2.3 billion and they're set forth to do this. How long are they going to do it? Over 1 year, 1 month, 1 day, and 1 hour. So over a 13-month period, this thing is going to be going on. And there, I didn't do the math as to how many they're killing, but it's a lot on a daily basis. So someone who's very quick in their head can try and do that math. You're looking at 390 into 2.3 billion. So someone's got a calculator. Let's 2.3 into 2, but it's got to be, what did that be, 10 million a day? Yeah, if you got a calculator, see if you can pull that off for me. It's 2.3 times 10 to the 9 divided by 390, ballpark figure. Yeah, it'd be stunning. They have breastplates of fire and jacinth and brimstone. Jacinth is, remember the high priest wore a breastplate. Well, these guys are wearing a breastplate too. Now, probably the breastplate is for armor to protect them, like anybody's going to be able to fight with them. Yes, what's your number?
According to this calculator, 5.9 million.
5.9 million people a day.
Just about, yeah.
5.9 million people a day.
It's pretty efficient.
Every single day for 13 months straight. Yes, sir.
The terror, I mean, that's going to be a tremendous amount of terror.
Sure, sure. Sure. Yeah. 5.9 million people being killed every single day. Boy. Look, why is the Lord doing this? Why is he doing this? Well, the Lord wants to establish the kingdom of heaven on earth. And in order to establish the kingdom of heaven on earth, he wants people whose hearts desire to know him and desire to follow him. And these people have hearts that want no part with him. I was trying to tell the young Christian the other day. I said, you know, I know it's a typical opening line. Hey, if you die today, would you go to heaven? Would you like to go to heaven? Now look, that's a good idea, but it's a bad idea because the average person's idea of heaven isn't what heaven is. I mean, to some people, remember that saying, to live is Christ, to die is gain. Okay, to live is fill in the blank. To live is golf. To live is beer. To live is football. I mean, and if you fill in the blank for a lot of these people. So to live in heaven is fill in the blank for them. But the reality is, heaven was described in Revelation chapter 4. And heaven is a place where you get to bow down before God and give him praise and worship. So if I said to the average person, would you like to go to that heaven? No. I don't even like church. That's right. So the Lord's about to prepare heaven on earth. He doesn't want those folks around anymore. They don't want him. He doesn't want them. The feeling's mutual. So they got the breastplates on. The breastplate has jacinth. Jacinth is a red, transparent variety of a gemstone made of zircon. Zircon is a mineral made of zirconium silicate. And so it's like a red stone on it. They also have, in addition to this, they have brimstone. Brimstone. Brimstone is like burning stone. It comes from sulfur. Now, we spell sulfur S-U-L-F-U-R, but it was spelled S-U-L-P-H-U-R. And the Latin sulfur is the root word to mean to burn. If you were to see elemental sulfur, it's like a bright yellow crystal at room temperature. But when you burn it, it melts into a blood red liquid and it emits a blue flame that's best observed in the dark. Sounds like something going on. A lake of fire is going to be made of brimstone. And when it burns, there's this sulfur dioxide that comes off, which is a suffocating, terrible smell. Rotten eggs give off sulfur. You get that smell. And this is burning sulfur dioxide. Sulfur is made inside of stars where the temperature is about 2.5 times 10 to the 9 Kelvin. That's 2.5 billion degrees Kelvin. And it fuses nuclei together of silicon and helium. And that's, you find it in stars. So it's kind of a picture of what's going to be going in the hot lake of fire. It's found in abundance throughout the universe. It's the 10th most common element in the universe. You find it in many types of meteorites. On Earth, you'll find it. There's a thing called the Pacific Ring of Fire. And you go on, Google the Pacific Ring of Fire, and you'll see the continents, let's see, North America, South America, and then Asia and Australia. And you'll see this ring that goes down from Alaska, looping down South America, across above Antarctic, up around Australia, through Indonesia, up through Japan. And this is, and it's underneath the Pacific Ocean where there are plates where there's volcanoes erupting constantly into the ocean. And you worry about a little tanker breaking and spilling its oil. Ooh, you have no concept. Anyways, that's another story. But they're just nuts. Environmentalists are nuts. But it's another story. They make me crazy. But these volcanoes are erupting constantly, and sulfur comes out of them. And right now they mine sulfur outside of Chile, Indonesia, and Japan along the Pacific Ring of Fire. And they get that sulfur from there. These supernatural creatures have the jacinth and the sulfur, picturing the fact that you're going to die, and to die is to shed blood. And you know, they would not take the shedding of blood that brought the remission of their sins, and the wages of sin is death. They're going to shed their own blood in this battle here. And this army just kills them, whether you're coming or going. If you get in front of them or behind them, you're going to get killed, because there's fire coming out the front and there's those serpents biting them in the back. So you can't approach this army. Now, verse 20, how do people respond? And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, they weren't killed by the locusts and the death that followed 5 months later, or killed by these guys and maybe who mopped up after the locusts, they repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which can neither see nor hear nor walk. Neither repented they of their murderers, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. And in this battle, like H.G. Wells could see in The War of the Worlds, and this is the War of the Worlds, it's the world of men against God and his creatures, sending forth to do judgment. And they will not repent. And this is the sad thing that happens. I mean, we try to win people by wooing them. And sometimes we try to win people by telling them that judgment is going to come. But some people's heart is so hard, they will not. They don't want God. They want no relationship with God. They don't want God, His Son, His Word, His holiness. They want no part of it. I don't know. It's sad. Broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many are on it, and they don't want it. Now, thankfully for the few, we go out, we continue to preach. And we're always praying for those few to hear the Word and to turn. And I'm looking at a whole bunch of the few that heard it and turned. And we continue. But sadly, there's a time when God's going to shut the door. They repented not. And we can see that they're worshiping devils, they're idols of gold and silver. You can see that these trumpets obviously are after the midpoint, because it's at the midpoint when he set up that abomination of desolation, and people are literally bowing down and worshiping it. We're going to talk about this in the next hour when we look at a very interesting phrase in the book of Ephesians that warns us against these type of things. But we're out of time. Any questions? Yes, in the back.
Those hellish locusts, they don't actually be in hell, you know, those people go to hell after the tribulation's over?
Well, the people that die after the trib, they go to hell. There's still 1,000 years.
Those locusts will be there, though.
They'll be back in the hell, too, yeah. So you get to accompany them down there. I don't know that they'll keep stinging you down there. I think hell's bad enough torment on its own. I mean, I don't know if they have separate compartments down there where the Lord separates the two types of creatures, one from another. But I guess it can make for some party in hell, right? People think they're going to party in hell.
Yeah.
Yes.
It sounds like these creatures.